Parables of Nature by Margaret Gatti. Read by Tim Lario. 3. The Unknown Land. But now they desire a better country. Hebrews 11, verse 16. It mattered not to the sedge warbler whether it were night or day. She built her nest down among the willows and reeds and long thick herbage that bordered the great river's side, and in her sheltered covert she sang songs of mirth and rejoicing both by night and day. "Where does the great river go to?" asked the little ones as they peered out of their nests one lovely summer night and saw the moonbeams dancing on the waters as they hurried along. Now, the sedge warbler could not tell her children where the great river went to, so she laughed and said they must ask the sparrow who chattered so fast, or the swallow who traveled so far, next time one or other came to perch on the willow tree to rest. "And then," said she, "you will hear all such stories as these." And thereupon the sedge warbler turned her voice to the sparrow's note, and the little ones almost thought the sparrow was there, the song was so like his. All about towns and houses and gardens and fruit trees and cats and guns, only the sedge warbler made the account quite confused, for she had never had the patience to sit and listen to the sparrow, so as really to understand what he said about these matters. But, imperfect as the tale was, it amused the little ones very much, and they tried then to sing like it, and sang till they fell asleep, and when they awoke they burst into singing again, for behold, the eastern sky was red with the dawn, and they knew the warm sunbeams would soon send beautiful streaks of light in among the reeds and flags that sheltered their happy home. Now, the mother bird would sometimes leave the little ones below and go up into the willow branches to sing alone, and as the season advanced she did this oftener and oftener, and her song was plaintive and tender then, for she used to sing to the tide of the river as it swept along she knew not whither, and think that some day she and her husband and children should all be hurrying so onward as the river hurried, she knew not whither also, to the unknown land whence she had come. Yes, I may call it the unknown land, for only faint images remained upon her mind of the country whence she had flown. At first she used to sing these ditties only when alone, but by degrees she began to let her little ones hear them now and then, for were they not going to accompany her? And was it not as well, therefore, to accustom them, gradually, to think about it? Then the little ones asked her where the unknown land was. But she smiled and said she could not tell them, for she did not know. "Perhaps the great river is traveling there all along," thought the eldest child, but he was wrong. The great river was rolling on hurriedly to a mighty city, where it was to stream through the arches of many bridges and bear on its bosom the traffic of many nations, restless and crowded by day, gloomy, dark, and dangerous by night. Ah, what a contrast were the day and night of the mighty city to the day and night of the sedge warbler's home, where the 24 hours of changes God has appointed to nature were but so many changes of beauty.
"Mother, why do you sing songs about another land?" asked a young, tender-hearted fledgling one day. "Why should we leave the reed-beds and the willow-trees? Cannot we all build nests here and live here always? Mother, do not let us go away anywhere else. I want no other land and no other home but this. There are all the eights in the great river to choose from, where we shall each settle. There can be nothing in the unknown land more pleasant than the reed-beds and the willow-trees here. I'm so happy. Leave off those dreadful songs."
Then the mother's breast heaved with many a varied thought, and she made no reply, so the little one went on.
"Think of the red glow in the morning sky, mother, and the soft haze, and then the beautiful rays of warm light across the waters. Think of the grand noonday glare when the broad flags and reeds are all burnished over with heat. Think of these evenings, mother, when we can sit about in the branches, here and there and anywhere, and watch the great sun go down behind the sky, or fly to the gates of the great river and sing in the long green herbage there, and then come home by moonlight and sing till we fall asleep, and wake singing again, if any noise disturb us, if a boat chance to paddle by, or some of those strange bright lights shoot up with a noise into the sky from the distant gardens. Think, even when the rain comes down, how we enjoy ourselves, for then how sweet it is to huddle into the soft, warm nest together and listen to the drops pattering upon the flags and leaves overhead. Oh, I love this dear, dear home so much. Sing those dreadful songs about another land no more.
Then the mother said, Listen to me, my child, and I will sing you another song. And the sedge warbler changed her note and sang to her tender little one of her own young days, when she was as happy and as gay as now, though not here among the reed beds, and how after she had lived and rejoiced in her happiness many pleasant months, a voice seemed to rise within her that said, This is not your rest. And how she wondered and tried not to listen, and tried to stop where she was and be happy there still. But the voice came oftener and oftener, and louder, and how the dear partner she had chosen heard and felt the same, and how at last they left their home together and came and settled down among the reed beds of the great river. And oh, how happy she had been!
And where is the place you came from, mother? Asked the little one. Is it anywhere near, that we may go and see it?
My child, answered the sedge warbler, it is the unknown land. Far, far away, I know, but where, I do not know. Only the voice that called me thence is beginning to call again, and as I was obedient and hopeful once, shall I be less obedient and hopeful now, that I have been so happy? No, my little one, let us go forth to the unknown land, wherever it may be, in joyful trust.
You will be with me, so I will, murmured the little sedge warbler in reply, and before she went to sleep she joined her young voice with her mother's in the song of the unknown land.
One day afterwards, when the parent birds had gone off to the sedgy banks of a neighboring stream, another of the young ones flew to the topmost branches of some willow trees, and delighted with his position, began to sing merrily as he swung backwards and forwards on a bough. Many were the songs he tried, and well enough he succeeded for his age, and at last he tried the song of the unknown land.
A pretty tune, and a pretty voice, and a pretty singer, remarked a magpie, who unluckily was crossing the country at the time, and whose mischievous spirit made him stop to amuse himself by showing off to the young one his superior wisdom, as he thought it.
I've been in many places, and even once was domesticated about the house of a human creature, so that I'm a pretty good judge of singing, continued Mr. Mag, with a cock of his tail, as he balanced himself on a branch near the sedge warbler. But upon my word, I've seldom heard a prettier song than yours. Only I wish you would tell me what it's all about.
It's about the unknown land, answered the young warbler, with modest pleasure, and very innocently.
"Do I hear you right, my little friend?" inquired the magpie with mock solemnity. "The unknown land, did you say? Dear, dear, to think of finding such abstruse philosophy among the marshes and ditches. It's quite a treat. And pray now, what is there that you can tell an old fellow like me, who am always anxious to improve myself, about this unknown land?"
"I don't know, except that we are going there some day," answered the sedge warbler, rather confused by the magpie's manner.
Now that is excellent, returned the magpie, chuckling with laughter. How I love simplicity, and really you are a choice specimen of it, Mr. Sedge Warbler. So you are thinking of a journey to this unknown land, always supposing, of course, my sweet little friend, that you can find the way to it, which between you and me I think there must naturally be some doubt about, under the circumstances of the place itself being unknown. Good evening to you, pretty Mr. Sedge Warbler. I wish you a pleasant journey.
Oh, stop! Stop! Cried the young bird, now quite distressed by the magpie's ridicule. Don't go just yet, pray. Tell me what you think yourself about the unknown land.
Oh, you little wiseacre, are you laughing at me?
Well, what can anybody, even so clever a creature as yourself, think about an unknown thing?
You can guess, I admit, anything you please about it, and so could I, if I thought it worthwhile to waste my time so foolishly. But you will never get beyond guessing in such a case. At all events, I confess my poor abilities can't pretend to do anything more.
Then you are not going there yourself? Murmured the overpowered youngster.
Certainly not. In the first place, I am quite contented where I am, and in the second place,
I'm not quite so easy of belief as you seem to be. How do I know there is such a place as this unknown land at all?
My father and mother told me that, answered the Sedge Warbler, with more confidence.
Oh, your father and mother told you, did they? Sneered the Magpie scornfully. And you're a good little bird and believe everything your father and mother tell you. And if they were to tell you you were going to live up in the moon, you'd believe them, I suppose.
They've never deceived me yet,
cried the young Sedge Warbler firmly, his feathers ruffling with indignation as he spoke.
Hoity-toity, what's the matter now, my dainty little cock? Who said your father and mother ever deceived you? But without being a bit deceitful, I take the liberty to inform you that they may be extremely ignorant. And I shall leave you to decide which of the two yourself, for I declare one gets nothing but annoyance by trying to be good-natured, you countrified young fellows. You are not fit to converse with a bird of any experience and wisdom. So once for all, good boy to you.
And the Magpie flapped his wings and was gone before the Sedge Warbler had half recovered from his fit of vexation. There was a decided change in the weather that evening, for the summer was now far advanced, and a sudden storm had brought cooler breezes and more rain than usual, and the young birds wondered and were sad when they saw the dark sky and the swollen river and felt that there was no warm sunshine to dry the wet, as was usual after a midday shower.
"Why is the sky so cloudy and lowering, and why is the river so thick and gloomy, and why is there no sunshine, I wonder?" said one.
"The sun will shine again tomorrow, I dare say," was the mother's answer. "But the days are shortening fast, and the storm has made this one very short, and the sun will not get through the clouds this afternoon. Never mind. The wet has not hurt the inside of our nest. Get into it, my dear ones, and keep warm, while I sing to you about our journey." Silly children, did you expect the sunshine to last here forever?
I hoped it might, and thought it would once, but lately I've seen a change, answered the young one who had talked to her mother so much before. And I do not mind now, mother. When the sunshine goes and the wet comes and the river looks dark and the sky black, I think about the unknown land.
Then the mother was pleased, and perched upon a tall flag outside the nest, she sang a hopeful song of the unknown land. And the father and children joined, all but one. He, poor fellow, would not, could not sing. But when the voices ceased, he murmured to his brothers and sisters in the nest, "This would all be very pleasant and nice if we could know anything about the land we talk about."
"If we were to know too much, perhaps we should never be satisfied here," laughed the tender little one, who had formerly been so much distressed about going.
"But we know nothing," rejoined the other bird. "Indeed, how do we know there is such a place as the unknown land at all?"
"We feel that there is, at any rate," answered the sister bird. "I have heard the call our mother tells about, and so must you have done."
"You fancy you've heard it, that is to say," cried the brother, "because she told you. It's all fancy, all guesswork, no knowledge. I could fancy I heard it too, only I will not be so weak and silly. I will neither think about going, nor will I go."
"This is not your rest," sang the mother in a loud, clear voice outside. And, "This is not your rest," echoed the others in sweet unison. And, "This is not your rest," sounded in the depths of the poor little Sedge Warbler's own heart.
"This is not our rest," repeated the mother. "The river is rushing forward. The clouds are hurrying onward. The winds are sweeping past, because here is not their rest. Ask the river. Ask the clouds, ask the winds where they go to. Another land. Ask the great sun as he descends away out of sight where he goes to. Another land. And when the appointed time shall come, let us also arise and go hence."
"Oh, mother, mother, would that I could believe you. Where is that other land?"
Thus cried the distressed doubter in the nest. And then he opened his troubled heart and told what the Magpie had said. And the parent birds listened in silence, and when he ceased,
"Listen to me, my son," exclaimed the mother, "and I will sing you another song."
Whereupon she spoke once more of the land she had left before, but now the burden of her story was that she had left it without knowing why. She went out, not knowing whither, in blind obedience, faith, and hope. As she traversed the wide waste of waters, there was no one to give her reasons for her flight,
or tell her, "This and this will be your lot." Could the magpie have told her, had he met her there? But had she been deceived? No. The secret voice which had called and led her forth had been one of kindness. When she came to the reed beds, she knew all about it, for then arose the strong desire to settle. Then she and her dear partner lived together, and then came the thought that she must build a nest. Ah! Had the magpie seen her then, building a home for children yet unborn, how he would have mocked at her! What could she know, he would have asked, about the future? Was it not all guesswork, fancy, folly? But had she been deceived? No. It was that voice of kindness that had told her what to do. For did she not become the happy mother of children? And was she not now able to comfort and advise her little ones in their troubles? For let the magpie say what he would, was it likely that the voice of kindness would deceive them at last? No, cried she. In joyful trust let us obey the call, though now we know not why. When obedience and faith are made perfect, it may be that knowledge and explanation shall be given. So ended the mother's strain, and no sad misgivings ever clouded the sedge warbler's home again. Several weeks of changing autumn weather followed after this, and the chilly mornings and evenings caused the songs of departure to sound louder and more cheerily than ever in the reed beds. They knew, they felt, they had confidence that there was joy for them in the unknown land. But one dark morning, when all were busy in various directions, a sudden loud sound startled the young ones from their sports, and in terror and confusion they hurried home. The old nest looked looser and more untidy than ever that day, for some water had oozed in through the half-worn bottom. But they huddled together into it, as of old, for safety. Soon, however, it was discovered that neither father nor mother were there, and after waiting in vain some time for their return, the frightened young ones flew off again to seek them. Oh, weary, weary search for the missing ones we love! It may be doubted whether the sad reality, when they came upon it, exceeded the agony of that hour's suspense. It ended, however, at last. On a patch of long, rank herbage which covered a mud bank, so wet that the cruel sportsman could not follow to secure his prey, lay the stricken parent birds. One was already dead, but the mother still lived, and as her children's wail of sorrow sounded in her ear, she murmured out a last, gentle strain of hope and comfort. Away, away, my darlings, to the unknown land! The voice that has called to all our race before, and never but for kindness, is calling to you now. Obey. Go forth in joyful trust. Quick! Quick! There's no time to be lost.
But my father! You! Oh, my mother! Cried the young ones.
Hush, sweet ones, hush. We cannot be with you there. But there may be some other unknown land which this may lead to.
And the mother laid her head against her wounded side and died. Long before the sunbeams could pierce the heavy haze of the next autumn morning, the young sedge warblers rose for the last time o'er their much-loved reed beds and took flight, they knew not whither. Dim and undefined hope, perhaps, they had that they might find their parents again in the unknown land. And if one pang of grief struck them when these hopes ended, it was but for a moment. For, said the brother bird, there may be some other unknown land, better even than this, to which they may be gone.